and welcome to Too Many RPGs, a show about RPG shows. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ethan. We talk to fans and creators of actual play podcasts and Twitch shows, and about what they enjoy about this medium that we all enjoy. Speaking of, we say that this is a show about RPG shows. Is it really a show? Is this a show?
I think so. I mean, we're a show.
Like, look, think of the word show.
Yeah.
Outside of the context of media, what is show? It'd be like to show someone something, right? Like, visually. Can you do that in a podcast?
According to Google Dictionary.
Oh.
So there's, you know, to be, allow, or cause to be visible. That's the verb.
Okay.
Or display or allow to be perceived. The noun definition, it can be a program on television or radio.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not dictionarily incorrect.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's good. That's important for the integrity of brain space.
We're a show. A spectacle or display. I guess this is a spectacle of interviews.
It is a bit of a spectacle, you're right. Wait, hold on.
What?
Oh, I need to... The red phone's blinking. I need to take this. It's probably going to take a while. I'm sorry. I gotta stop.
But we have an interview.
I don't know, Colin Grant or something.
Okay. So, I guess, well, Ethan is gone, we'll have friend of the show, Grant Ellis, do this interview with Jeff Stormer of Party of One Pod with me. Hi Jeff. Hi, Grant.
Hi, everyone. Bye, everyone.
Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I am doing very well.
I've noticed not enough people ask, you know, how the host is doing when you give them the, like, how are you doing today? So I kind of wanted to, it's my new thing I'm trying to push on is throwing that back a little bit. Because I found the few times that someone has really pushed on it, I feel like it really brightens my day. So thank you. I wanted to check in and make sure you're doing okay.
Aw, thanks, Jeff. How are you doing, Grant?
It's a doozy over here, a whirlwind, a cascade of emotions, feelings, and my insides are all twisted up. But as the work week comes to a close, my smile is brimming across my face because Jeff is positively enthusiastic, and I can't help but smile. I don't even remember anything that happened this week that could have been negative after all that. So,
well, there you go.
There
See that?
Go.
That's what we're all here for. We're spreading smiles.
Perfect. Jeff, it's very weird because my boyfriend is also named Jeff, so it's very strange and he's the only other Jeff I know. I mean, besides you now.
Sure.
So, like, it's very weird to talk to a Jeff who's not my Jeff, so I...
Which spelling?
With a J, the correct way.
E-R-Y or R-E-Y?
Jeffrey, yeah. R-E.
Okay. All right. Accepted.
Perfect. When we first started dating, I thought he was like a Geoff with a G, just because he looked like a Geoff, and I told him that, and he was incredibly offended. So
yeah, I would. Yeah, that's understandable. I think.
Yeah, I think he looks like a Jeff with a G, and he's just gonna have to change his spelling.
You can tell him that.
I will.
He does. I think so, but he is very adamant about his Jeff with a J. So, Jeff is the host of Party of One. Tell us about Party of One, Jeff.
Party of One is an actual play podcast focused on two-player role-playing experiences. What that means is that every week I sit down with a friend, just the two of us, we play a two-player game, we share some laughs, sometimes a few tears, and we have a really good time. In a nutshell. That's my elevator pitch, business card, two-sentence throw-out pitch.
And so, you said two-player experiences. So these are not always two-player games or games that were designed to be for two players. Do you sometimes are like, let's make a D&D for two players now?
Yeah, it's there's a few different sort of things at work when I say experiences. One is that, yeah, we alternate between, or not like alternate like 50-50, but we mix between episodes with games that are designed for two and games that are more like traditional games like D&D that we've sort of hacked to see what happened to them when we play them with two people. And also, game implies fun, and sometimes the games that we play are extremely, they're good, and they're great audio, and they're great, you know, we love to play them and to experience them, but they're not always fun in that sense. You know, if that makes, you know, if you know what I mean.
Well, why don't you give us an example?
Sure. So there's a game called The Bite, which is one of our more popular episodes. It's I played it with a good friend, Rich Howard, who hosts Whelmed and is just an amazing person. and I made Rich cry.
Oh.
Because the premise of the game is it is the scene in a zombie film where two people are in a room together and one of them may or may not have been bitten. And there's a gun with a single bullet kind of sitting in the middle. And you kind of have to go, do I think you're a zombie? Because there's a chance that it's neither of you, or there's a chance that you are the zombie, or there's a chance that the person across the room is a zombie. So you have to, so it's this very tense, painful, as you kind of try and talk to each other and figure out, can I, you know, enact violence on this person? It is a very painful emotional journey that we take together, and like it's rough audio to it's a rough game to play, which is why I think I feel like calling it a game feels very I've explained this to friends who like have never heard the podcast, and they're like, that's not a game, that's being sad.
Yes. Well, I think Grant and I are very well acquainted with being sad while intending to play a game, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think I actually disagree a little that a game doesn't necessarily imply fun. Surely that's one of the most common goals of a game is to have fun or, you know, engage in a pleasurable activity. But there's a lot of games out there that have different goals than simply leisure, pleasure. You know, they might be an instructional game. It might be a game that's designed to teach military strategy to a profession. Disclosure, you know, my background is an instructional designer with a lot of game design elements part of that. Or a goal of a game, you know, there could be a game such as Polaris where the goal of the game is to tell a good story, but it's always going to be a sad story most of the time as written in the rules. So I actually think it's really neat. And I actually describe my actual plays fairly in line with Jeff, where I describe them as sensory experiences. This is a sensory experience. You're going to hear things, you're going to see things, and even the players, I can't necessarily say a game, so to speak, because even if that's what it is, you know, there's a players, there's definitely play, but it is more of an experience than it's strictly a game, if that makes sense, you know, and that's sort of a non-controversial disagreement. It's sort of a level setting and aligning with our definitions.
I feel exactly the same way. I feel like if you were to say, you know, I play games with people, like they're going to hear that. And I've had this experience, you know, telling people that, and they go, oh, cool, that's fun. And then they listen to some episodes and they go, that wasn't yeah, fun. What happened? Like, oh, God. So there's a certain degree of like, here's what you're going to experience going into the podcast.
It's always really interesting trying to explain more high drama or emotional games to people who don't play, because you're like, oh man, I'm just real wrecked from this game I was playing yesterday, and you describe all of this like stuff, and it was like I was crying for like all night after, and they're like, wait, you cried for fun? Question mark? Like, recreational emotion feeling is maybe...
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I like recreational emotion feeling.
What made you want to focus on two-player experiences?
For one thing, they are a lot easier to schedule. I don't know. Like, I've scheduled games with five people, and I can tell you, I get a date on the calendar a lot faster when it's one person telling me when they're free. But the joke answer aside, it's that I've always been interested in them. They've been something that I've been kind of curious about, and I'd been kind of exploring for a long time outside of the world of podcasting, so that when it came time, when I came to a point where I was like, I want to do this as a pod, like I want to start a podcast and kind of explore things with like on mic, I kind of realized that this was something that it was an area that I was interested in, that I could explore with more people, with more games, and like really kind of, you know, explore something that was kind of not being played and not being experienced in this sort of larger space. At least when I started. Nowadays, there's a million two-player podcasts, and it is amazing. But, you know, when we were starting, it was a lot of like, well, this is something that I'd love to see and you know, experiment with and explore. And doing it as a podcast felt like the right next step in that kind of exploration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did the Table for Two panel at PAX Unplugged, yes?
Yes, that was us. It was myself, Russell Collins, who was a frequent guest on Party of One, Zach and Diana from Heart Points, Ben and Mel from Pod of Love, and that was it. And then Kevin Gallagher from Everything is Awesome ran audio. So yeah, it was the six of us.
Yeah, and we've had Ben and Mel on the show, and I actually did an episode on Heart Points, so too many RPGs fans will be well familiar with.
Yes, indeed.
With those people.
I've also done an episode of Pod of Love. It was a great experience. I loved it.
Oh, yeah? How did you find Fog of Love?
Fog of Love, I really enjoyed. It was very tactical, which I was very surprised about for like a role-playing game about romance and feelings. Like, I was not kind of expecting it to be quite so, to be quite so strategic. That caught me off guard, but I think the stories we ended up telling flowed very natural from that in a very cool and interesting way.
Very good. So you mentioned that Russell Collins has been on the show on Party of One a lot. Do you have kind of like a regular cast, or is it always special guests?
So every episode is for the most part, a different guest in a different game. We try to make it, almost all the episodes are self-contained one-shots with a different guest in a different game every week. Just, it helps me play through all the games that I have in my itch.io library that continually expands, and I can just whittle away at them one game at a time.
Ah, so this is your nefarious plan, is to just play all the games you want to play.
There were three main objectives for launching Party of One. We had three goals when we started this thing. Find an excuse to play all of the games that I had bought and not yet played. Make new friends and do a thing, a creative thing, because I had kind of not been doing a creative thing at the time. So those were the three goals, and so far it has been successful. Like, we've hit those 3 points, we're good.
One of the things that I'm noticing on of your episode list is that you play a lot of games with their designers, and a lot of these games are not meant for two players, but you play them with their designers anyway. How is that experience of like taking this game, playing it with the designer, and then saying, okay, we're gonna break it on purpose so we can play it just two player?
It's actually one of my favorite like parts of the game, of the recording pro. Like, I love playing games with the designers, because I feel like when you play a game with its designer, you get to kind of get into their headspace and be like, this is the kind of story that I want to tell with this game. This is why I'm making this game. So getting to like dig into that is really cool and interesting, and like it's my favorite thing. And then getting to play those games, it's great, because a lot of the times when I play with designers, they're people that will either have reached out to the show and said like, hey, this game will work with two players if you want to play it, or they're people that I've like talked to about it and they're like, let's kind of just see what happens. And there's an element of kind of experimentation that's really, it's one of my favorite things, is going, okay, cool, let's see what happens if we boil this down to a two-player experience. Does it change the fundamental story of the game? Can we create that experience with two people? And if we can, how is it different and unique and special?
Cool. There are like 100, oh, almost 160 episodes now. Over 160, 183.
Yeah, I think 183, 184 will drop tonight after this recording when I record intro, outro.
So of these 184 episodes, and I'm sure some of them are two-parters, but what are your favorite kind of games to play of all the kinds of games that you've played?
God, that's a big question. So I was thinking about this, and to your point about two-parters, also echoing back to the Russell Collins being a frequent guest, almost all the episodes are one-shots. We have a few two-parters, which are mostly games that ran longer than 2 hours, and like final editing time was over 2 hours, because I don't enjoy when a podcast is over like 90 minutes, so I feel like if it's gonna run over that time, I'll chop it into two episodes. And then we ran one long form campaign at about one episode a month, which was Project Wingspan with Russell Collins, that we played, I want to say, between 7 and 10 sessions of over the course of about a year. So there's for the most part, they're one shots, but there are a few recurring stories scattered throughout. But I was thinking about this today, and there's kind of two answers to this, because it really depends on who is editing the episode. Party of One is a two-person team. There's myself, and then there is producer of the show, Jen Frank, who is the unseen hand behind the scenes making stuff happen. We very much have very different views on the kinds of games that we like and the kind of games that we like to hear. The backlog is very much broken into Jeff episodes and Jen episodes, where the games that I like and the games that I like to play and the games that I like to edit and listen to are sort of more dramatic and emotional and often more downbeat and sadder and sort of more tragic, And then Jen likes to hear episodes that are fun that she can listen to and be like, that was great. It was a great way to spend my afternoon. It was, you know, sort of light, a little bit more lightweight, a little sillier. So you kind of, looking through the backlog, you'll kind of see an ebb and flow depending on whose turn it was to edit that episode of whether it's a sort of more downbeat episode or sort of a more silly and lightweight episode, which I think gives it a nice flow over time, is in terms of like, it doesn't push the show in one direction too often because there's always going to be that kind of urge to make sure that I have that the show doesn't become a downer or doesn't become too silly and fluffy at the same time, is my super long-winded answer to your question.
No, that's fine. What's an example of like a Jen system and an example of a Jeff system?
So there's a Jeff system. I can, the edit episode that I've been editing, actually pull up the episode list real quick because there's a lot of them and sometimes it's easier to have them in front of me.
There are a lot of them. How long have you been doing this podcast?
We started in October of 2015 and then we went weekly in January of 2016. The first like three episodes were kind of released on a sort of whenever we have time like schedule. And then we kind of sat down and sort of decided, let's make this weekly and just see how long before we kind of either run out of guests games or just get tired of a weekly schedule. Mm-hmm. And it's been 3 years and that hasn't happened yet. So it might eventually, but we haven't reached that point yet. Here we go. I've got a very good Jen, like an episode that I know Jen really enjoyed editing and an episode that I really enjoyed editing. So we played, this is not a game that was designed for two, but we played it with two and it worked really well, which was Golden Sky Stories.
Oh, yes.
It's a family-friendly role-playing game about henge, which are animal spirits helping people in a tiny town going on sort of lovable family adventures. Mm-hmm. It was very kind of, you know, bright and sunny and optimistic and, you know, there were challenges and there were difficulties, but it was very cute and it's upbeat. And then when we played Spindle Wheel, which is sort of a tarot-esque card-driven storytelling game, we ended up kind of telling a story about like ecological disaster and dark forbidden magic that ended with a community under siege and like going to war against like a supernatural menace. It was very kind of dark and tragic, and that was very much an episode where I was like, I'm gonna schedule this so that I edit this one, because I feel like Jen's gonna walk away and go, I hated editing that one. Jeff, why did you make me do that?
Yeah, I have not played Spindle Wheel, but we are a big fan of Golden Sky Stories, Ethan and I. And
I love it. It's a really cute, it's a super, it's so good cute game.
Grant, have you played Golden Sky Stories yet?
I haven't played. I own a copy of the game. We've just not gotten around to executing a session yet.
It's a good, I mean, one of the things I like about Golden Sky Stories is that it's like, it's a pleasing read too.
Yeah, it really is. It's, there's a lot of just stuff in it that's just kind of cute that like you read it and you get that kind of warm fuzzy feeling that I think is really effective.
Yeah.
Like, and it's a game that the text of which really captures what the playing the game should feel like. So when you sit down to play it, you're kind of like, "Oh, okay, I kind of get it. I get it. I understand kind of what we're doing."
So you mentioned you've been doing this for 3 years and they're, yep, mostly one shots.
Yep.
Do you get tired of one shots? Are you like missing that full long-term campaign experience where you get to like really dig into one story, or are you kind of like all one shots forever?
It's funny because I actually have my off mic gaming group, we play long form games where like we tend to play the same game for like, we just finished a year long Shadow of the Demon Lord game and we started our next kind of long-term game that I'm running, so I get that campaign experience when I'm not making podcasts. And then like I really like the one-shot structure for podcasts because it means I don't have to quite like keep track of as much lore, and we can tell the story, kind of be done with it. If we feel like coming back for a sequel later, we can revisit those characters, but I like telling a nice cohesive self-contained story. I one of my least favorite things is telling a story that doesn't have an ending. So I love the one-shot structure, particularly for the podcast.
I particularly like it much better as a viewer as well. One of my biggest problems with many of the actual plays that are persistent campaigns is they're very hard to get into or to, mm-hmm, complete. And they actually, I want to say the fourth edition D&D Dungeon Master's Guide talks about how it's very easy for a campaign to fall into what they call comic book or syndicated TV format, where it's just like, this will go on forever perpetually with no ending if you let it.
Mm-hmm.
So you really want to start thinking about how you structure an ending to a campaign. And I think most of my actual plays, at least the successful ones, have been engineered and designed between one shots, three episodes, and six episodes. Just kind of, okay. And it's very easy to integrate like a three-act structure into any of those formats. I'm usually running two-hour episodes, you know, and with about 90 minutes of game time. So it's just kind of like make it more consumable from an audience perspective. But also, I think there's a lot of satisfaction for the players, too, because they really remember all the notes that were hit in the narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really... There's a thing about Party of One that, like, I always point out is that even though I said, like, I don't like Party of Ones going over 90 minutes, I will let them be like an hour and a half, you know. I'll put in a two-part episode, but like I wanted to, it was something that I've thought about for a really long time, especially once I kind of got a handle on the form is I started thinking of them as especially in regards to Party of One, I started thinking of them as movies, not TV. Because I was like, we're going to tell a story here on Party of One. It's going to be self-contained. It's going to be a little bit longer, maybe, like a little bit longer than like a traditional actual play episode, which might only run 40 minutes. But we're going to take a little extra time. We're going to take that hour and a half, and we're going to like share a full kind of story that says, hey, like, here's the story from beginning to end so that you can listen to it. You can kind of sit down, listen to it. In 80 minutes, you get the full emotional experience, right? Like that. Once I kind of started thinking about Party of One episodes as movies, I was like, okay, now I can kind of start to think about, like, how do we play with that structure? What does a sequel episode look like? Oh, it's not a sequel episode of TV. It's a sequel movie. So we have to it gave me a lot of good reference points once I started thinking about Party of One in terms of movies, because it was a very kind of self-contained, single three-act structure within that 90 minutes. It gave me a lot of really great timing beats that I could go off of. Like, I could go, okay, if I'm at 60 minutes of recording time, I need this to happen so that we catch the listener's attention and we kick it into the third act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find playing with Grant. Grant and I are doing a one-to-one actual play on my Twitch channel right now. And I find that when playing with Grant, I think maybe it's just because you're a filmmaker, Grant, but you just kind of operate in three-act structures naturally, or at least it seems natural. It could be all very planned on your end. But that kind of three-act structure is a really good way to make a session go.
Some of the games we're playing take that as part of the design philosophy. I know we haven't played Companion's Tale on that show, but Companion's Tale is one where they codify three-act structure into the rules. Unrestful Hearts, the game I designed, it's codified in. And when thinking about shows, it might be, you know, I've been on over 1,000 Twitch broadcasts, right? So it's just, I kind of have that built-in time clock when we're on a show and the show's running to sort of, all right, let's start hitting beats at certain times possible. I know it's a little tricky sometimes with a game, but that's why I really like a lot of these story games and narrative games give you the tool set within the framework of the game and the system to play with a three-act structure. And one-shots are really good for that anyhow, just because speaking of, you know, if you just look at this like Party of One episode list, I mean, you could click on any of these episodes and I think you'd get your money's worth if you were paying, you right? Like, I'd probably pay as much as I would to see a movie. I mean, shoot, you're playing Hex Ed with Sharong Biswas, who's a very good friend of mine, Starcross with Alex Roberts, you know, a Cozy Den with Kira. You know, it's just all the cool games, you know, it's all the, with all the cool people, and like you could just hop right in and have a little mini movie, you know.
That's really the goal is cool games, cool people, and good times. Like, really boiled down into as few words as possible, that's kind of what we're aiming for. Those the episodes that you shouted out are extremely good. Side note, the Starcrossed with Alex Roberts, I think, might be our most popular episode.
It's because Starcrossed is an incredible game.
It's because Starcrossed is an incredible game, and also it's Starcrossed about wrestling, and so it is a very specific.
Oh, yes.
Hits a lot of good content.
Super Starcrossed.
Yeah, Starcrossed about wrestling. That was the first time I played it with Grant, immediately after he was like, I want to make it about wrestling. Which, didn't you do that? Oh, no, you didn't do that. Sam did that.
Sam did that, Hard Times, which is a game, which is like you tell the story of a very charged emotional wrestling feud through the Jenga mechanic. And it's freaking awesome. And then the story that we told was two wrestlers in the 90s, one a babyface and the other a heel, who, spoiler alert, are deeply, deeply in love. Champ and Crowbar love each other very much. It's a good episode. I think about it a lot.
StarCrossed is a really great game like that because, I mean, I've played StarCrossed 12 times now? Yeah, probably about 12 times now with different people pretty much every time. And I remember every single one of those games, like, off the top of my head. They're very, I think it's one of those games where that act structure, that three act structure is built into it with the scenes. And so it's very vivid in your head. There's always something to do. You're never kind of floundering for more content.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, for me, the magic of two player games in general, because like I talked about it on the Table for Two panel. There's a level of intimacy there in terms of like small group conversations that just kind of like heightens the emotional experience of any interaction. Is a different experience when it's just two people.
Mm-hmm.
So the stories that we tell in a two-player space, you know, the two-player game stories that we tell, they take on this added weight because it's you and I as two people sharing something together that even if I record it and I put it out for the world, you and I are the only two people sharing this experience together. Even if other people hear it, we are sharing it, and that gives it this sort of special element that is present in role-playing games all the time, right? Like, we are always, my co-host and real-life best friend Aaron from the other podcast that I host, All My Fantasy Children, loves to say, you know, we're making sculptures in the snow. And it's like, yes, like the idea that we're sharing something that will not persist in through tomorrow, the idea that only you and I as two people are sharing this thing that is just for us, just for this moment, just for right now, and will be gone in an hour, is really special and is amazing and kind of magical. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love two-player games so much.
Yeah, it's very good, and it can be, I find that two-player games, I can't play, well, you can play for a very long time, but I find that it's not good for me to play it because it's so exhausting. Like, I remember once playing one-to-one Dungeons & Dragons, you know, very social encounter heavy, for like 7 hours, and it was brilliant, but like, we were both just, we couldn't do anything the next day.
I can't imagine. Like, it's funny because when we started Party of One, like, I had figured, like, you know, I was thinking about it in terms of when I would schedule with my first few guests. I remember telling them, hey, set aside 4 hours. We're probably going to use that 4 hour block. We might end a little early. We'll aim to be under 4 hours, but I would like you to set aside 4 hours. And I got about half a dozen episodes in before I went, A, we are naturally, the energy between the two of us, we're naturally reading off each other and saying after an hour, we need to wrap this up because, like, I can't have the spotlight on me for that much longer. And also, it is. You're exactly right. It's exhausting. And I just, after an hour and a half, I'm like, I really just want to go to bed. I'm going to go get some totally, beer with my wife.
And I think with a game like Dungeons & Dragons, it actually works mechanically. Like, if you remove a lot of the extra players from play, a lot of the time, and the reason a Dungeons & Dragons session typically, you know, runs recommended 4 hours, is because of all the mechanics that need to process between the table. But as soon as you start removing players, you start wrapping up the game faster, and it's kind of like that emotional black hole hot potato you pass around. Mm-hmm. And also the challenges in D&D scale with the party as well. So if with the underlying math to the core system will sort of scale down. So I've noticed that as well. So like when I run my games for my patrons and we have less players, it's just a shorter session. And you'll also notice groups out there with larger casts tend to run and use more time. Not just because they can share and spread the energy around too, but the underlying math of the system increases it.
It just takes longer to literally play the game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, combat can go from like, you know, 30 minutes with two or three players, and then, you know, you get to five players, and then all of a sudden your first round takes an hour because everybody's just doing all the stuff and there's so much math to do.
Yeah.
One of the things that I find really tricky, especially with games like D&D that are built around group problem solving, is that you don't have anybody else to bounce ideas off of, and you don't have time to kind of figure, like, while somebody else is doing their thing, the spotlight's on them, you have time to be like, okay, this is what I'm gonna do to solve this problem that I have. Like, I think this is how I can work it out. I'm gonna check my notes to make sure that this mechanical thing works the way I think I do. And you just don't have that with a one-on-one.
Oh yeah, it's the spotlight never really comes off of you because it's just, you have an audience of one, and you know, the spotlight is always there. So it can be exhausting, and I find it also really liberating because I am on a tech, I believe the industry term is a ham. I'm a ham. So I like having the spotlight. I need it. I live for it. I crave the spotlight at all times.
I always find I make my worst decisions when I'm in one-to-one games. I always just like do the foolish thing, partly because there's nobody else to do the foolish thing and that would be more interesting, but also because I don't have time to think about, is this the smart choice? Because even if it's just you and the other player, and the other player would be fine if you were like, hey, I just need to stop and like think about this for a second, you don't want to because you don't want to lose that energy, right? So you're like, well, I'm gonna go with my gut, and it is always a bad idea.
And that's part of it, is that, yeah, you're kind of on the hook for every sort of narrative beat that occurs, which is one of the reasons that I think a lot of two-player games and a lot of the games that we play on the show kind of turn out super by design, and the games that we play with them kind of often lean in a very tropey direction, and I use that term in a good way, in terms of, like, they're very much what happens a lot of times. I see it in play a lot, I see it in game design decisions a lot, especially around two-player games, is what they will end up saying is, like, this is the story that we're telling. Starcross is a great example. We're telling a story of forbidden love. At this part of the story, one player is going to be kind of explicitly saying things while sort of hiding their true intentions. The other player is going to be trying and failing to conceal their true intentions. At a certain point, the tower falls. That is the part of this story where one of you makes a silly decision, or makes the reckless decision and accidentally reveals everything. It very much says, hey, this is a story that we're telling. It is sort of artificially constructed. Here are the beats of that narrative. When you get to this point in the story, you play out the beat in that narrative. I see it a lot in game design around like short player count games. And then you see it a lot, especially on Party of One, we see it a lot with, you know, we play through a game and you'll hear me go a lot, okay, this is absolutely what happens here because this is the part in the story where this happens. Mm-hmm. And I think having that trope awareness really comes up a lot because it sort of gives you, it is a way to sort of take that decision-making hook off your shoulders a little bit, or that weight off your shoulders of like, I know what would happen in this story. If I were watching this in a movie, here's the predictable thing that would happen. So if I don't want to come up with a more clever or outlandish suggestion, let me just throw out the next thing that would happen in this story. In a horror scenario, it's, I could come up with a really elaborate, you know, next step to outwit this murderer, or I could run into the attic and check out what's happening in the spooky attic, because this is the part of the story where I'm gonna go look at the spooky attic. Like, I know that there's a monster up there, but I gotta get to the part in the story where I see the spooky monster in the attic.
Yeah, yeah. What is a system that you didn't think would work very well for two players, but you tried it anyway and it worked super well? And what was a system that you thought, you know what, no, I can't, It was fine with two players, but I would really rather have more players playing it.
The latter answer I can answer off the top of my head. We tried it in the first 10 episodes and it sort of fell. I kind of feel like it's a fun episode, but I feel like the game kind of falls flat on its face. Paranoia doesn't fundamentally work with two players. Like, it just is an experience. experience that didn't really... It was fun. Like, it was a fun game. Like, we had a blast playing through that game, but the actual act of playing it, the actual experience of it, the game that we played was fun, but it wasn't Paranoia. Like, I am someone that loves Paranoia. I love Paranoia so much that I wrote a Paranoia knockoff. Like, that's how much I love the game Paranoia. Mission Accomplished 20, available for purchase 2019 sometime? It'll be out soon. But yeah, that was a game that, like, we were like, let's give it a shot, and it just kind of fell down and it just didn't connect, which it's gonna happen. Is I always compare it a lot to like taking a part out of a car and just seeing if the car still runs. it's a lot of times like playing a game that was not designed for two players with two players is kind of like, let's see what happens to the car if I unscrew this bolt. Let's just see if the car still drives or if the wheel is gonna fall off and I crash. That was an instance where playing it with two players, I kind of unpulled the engine of the game. A game that worked really unexpectedly well. There's a game, actually, it's even more of a like a category of games. I originally swore up, down, left, right, A, B, start that you could not play Powered by the Apocalypse games with two people. I swore it up and down. I was like, it's not gonna work. You need players to, like, the game is built on interactions between players and player relationships. They're not going to translate. And then we started playing them as sort of a GM-less experience where instead of having one person be the GM, we kind of, let's get into some deep game design theory here, because this is the best way to explain
Please
it.
Tell
the
me.
Short answer is Powered by the Apocalypse games work really, really well with
two players. I was going to say, and without getting too into the weeds, if... If it's a game with an agenda, and the fiction informs moves, and you know what the moves are, and the GM is essentially a player in those games anyways, you know, you just make the move that follows the fiction. And I think it works. Because I was going to say, I think they totally work great with two players. When I came back from almost a 5-year hiatus from role-playing games, 2012, I started with some PBTA games because someone was like, well, you know, you need to have Grant Ellis run this for us. And it was just a one-on-one experience. And I ran a one-on-one Dungeon World campaign. We played 20 mm-hmm. sessions in a row. And I was just like, wow, I guess I'm back.
Yeah. So the way that I've come to look at Powered by the Apocalypse as like an engine is if you really look at the GM, to your point, Grant, like the moves follow the fiction and the GM character sheet at its core, if you really look at it as a game piece, right? If you look at it as a gameplay piece, the GM character class or playbook or whatever is a list of mechanical prompts or a list of narrative prompts and a list of if X, then Y. What we found playing those games with two people is you could translate that into you can make that game GM-less by just going, okay, you're going to roll the dice. When you roll this number, we know that if 7 to 9, X happens, soft move happens. Here are the list of soft mm-hmm. moves. Fiction follows, like the moves follow the fiction. Which of the soft moves follows your 7-9 roll? You can just kind of like make the GM roll very kind of fluid and flexible and kind of hand that back and forth. And we say, okay, then let's play this GM list. We'll get that inter-character play that I think is really important in PBTA games. And we'll kind of blow it up and see what happens. Turns out the car runs really smoothly.
Yeah, I want to add to that I've used those sort of Baker family guiding principles at my day job as the chief operations officer of a very large multi-million dollar company where they were working on a project and I was like, I don't know if you do this, and I was just like, look, you can always follow the text verbatim, and then you might need to fill in the gaps with your imagination, or you might need a freeform, but let's just make you kind of a sheet, essentially write my list of GM moves on the job. I was like, you know, just follow naturally, just look at what's happening in the game, and then you've rolled mechanically, it's going to tell you, it's going to come from this list, just like you said, Jeff, and then it's just going to be like, all right, and then that's what happens. Let's move on. And gosh, it's a really great way to also teach people how to play role-playing games, because like I played PBTA games before I ever even played Dungeons and Dragons. So when I finally sat down at D&D, it's like I already had this like hard-coded AI to really help facilitate and run games, just because like, oh, I've seen this situation before. Let's just kind of mm-hmm. have my invisible moves that I'm going to throw out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Powered by the Apocalypse system. You can almost play it with a flowchart. Like, you could play it by yourself and be like, this happens then. And it feels, and it's part of the reason why they aren't my favorite kind of games to play, because it all feels very predictable.
Yeah.
Which is great for the very specific experiences that most PBTA games want you to play. But yeah, it's very easy to play. It's very easy to GM. If anybody is like afraid of GMing or not sure about running games, I always recommend PBTA games because of that. It's just like the game almost plays itself.
I have one other game that I thought was going to be an absolute disaster and turned out really well, and I actually want to play it again and like push it on a mechanical level, push it further than how we played it. Do you know what game? A game based talking about like interpersonal relationships. There's actually two, and they're both we played them both in the same way that I would love to do more of. Lady Blackbird and Fiasco.
Oh, nice.
Are both games that I swore up and down you would never work with two people, because they are games that are specifically about this person is connected to that person is connected to person A, is connected to person B is connected to person C is connected back to person A also is connected to person D, who is connected to person D, who is connected to person A. Like they're both games predicated on a relationship web, which obviously with two people you can't really replicate. And then when we played them on the show, both times I went, what if we just played multiple characters and we just kind of like didn't role play it as a single person, but we just kind of said, okay, in this scene, you're going to play person A, I'm going to play person D, and we're going to see how those characters interact.
Mm-hmm.
And like that sort of, it took on from a performance mode, the closest I would compare it to is almost like a short form improv, like a Whose Line Is It Anyway type setup, where it's like, all right, in this scene, I'm playing this person, you're playing that person, let's go and we'll see where the story takes us. And like, that was very different than playing one person and getting into their head and living in their movements, but it really captured the tone of those games, that sort of complicated adventure romance and the Coen brothers-esque, you know, calamity of those games respectively, really nicely and unexpectedly easily. And I kind of want to continue to try and play them where I'm like, let's just both play three or four characters and just kind of flip around depending on who's in the scene.
Yeah, I think that's something that always kind of throws people off when you're like, well, you can just be more than one character. Like, there's a great bit in, I think it's the Apocalypse World Advancements, and one of the advancements is just like, play another character. Now you play two characters. Why are you so overwhelmed? The MC plays 50. Like, if you've ever GM'd a game before, you know, you've played way more than just two or three player characters. But all of a sudden, when you get into the head of player characters, you feel like it should be only one. There should only be two people in this story. But I agree, I really enjoy having other characters to play off, because sometimes there are story beats that you think would be interesting, but oh, I don't think that character would ever find that self in that situation. So you can go, well, I have this other character that would definitely be there, so let's do this.
Exactly. And it lets you play in a lot more narrative circumstances, right? Like, you're like, exactly like what you're saying. It lets you kind of, now I'm all right, cool. I've done the kind of like subterfuge. We did the sort of intense social scene with a lot of political maneuvering. Now I want to punch somebody in the face. Let me go play the character that's going to, as this is happening, is punching people in the face. And you get to like have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah. What game have you not played yet on the podcast that you would really love to play?
Well, I just want to say I've been looking through his archives and there's one I want to play with him, but we'll get to that after he answers.
What game have I not played that I really, really want to? There are a few games that I'm like afraid to play, for lack of a better term. There's a few games that I'm like, as someone that loves intense emotional play, I don't know if I'm like fully ready for. One of them is like Blind Man Bluff by Acer Tolentino, which is about two people in warring countries who talk to each other on the phone at like a nuclear missile silo, and they do like a daily check-in on the day that the big red button is pushed. And I'm like, fuck, that sounds like so much. And like, I don't know if my heart can, like, that sounds like such an intense experience. Periodically, I'll just look at it in my RPG folder on my desktop and be like, one day I'm going to get to you. So I guess that would be the category. Is there just some games that I'm like, I don't think I'm emotionally ready to play this game yet. Like, I don't think I have the right person. I don't think, like, it's a matter of finding the best possible person to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And like, knowing like, this is going to be like a really painful experience. So I want somebody that I'm really, really comfortable with. But on a lighter note, I will say Treehouse Dreams. It is a game about building an imaginary treehouse that you share with the other players. And you fill it out one. It's just a very sweet, heartfelt, like, wholesome game where you draw a card and it tells you, like, a room in your imaginary treehouse and you tell a little story about it, or you maybe tell a story about your own life, and it just is, like, a very kind of role-playing, get-to-know-each-other exercise that, like, I think is really cute and, like, I want to play it with somebody, but I don't know who I want to play it with yet. I'm keeping that one for just, like, it's the right time, right guess
situation. Yeah, totally.
Which is kind of every game I haven't played on the show yet.
All right, Grant, what do you want to play?
I'd love to play Cypher System with them.
Mm.
Oh, specifically, yes.
You know, the goal of Cypher System is discovery. It's finding new things that you never found before and solving problems in unique ways every time. So even I've run hundreds of sessions of Cypher System over the past year. And yeah, even as a game master, you don't know going into it how the player characters are going to solve the eventual problem. And it's that way every session. So it's prep light, mm-hmm. and it's informed a lot of the design that we're seeing make its way through a number of circles. I'd also love to play Invisible Sun with you, also by Monty Cook Games. Mm. Both are near and dear to my heart, but I think you would have a blast in either of them with the framework design for a one-to-one, which both games support, by the way.
I've never read Invisible Sun because I got a job and I got bills.
You get lost in it. We interviewed Grant about Invisible Sun, and then Ethan immediately bought a cube, and then I didn't hear from him for like 2 weeks, except every so often he'd be like, I figured out another room.
I was gonna say that the funny thing about Ethan is, like, I was like, you didn't hear from Ethan, and then I would get like text messages at 3 a.m. He goes, wait, Grant, and then he'd just send me a picture of a math equation, and then I'd send a picture of him of like the validation to his theory. I'm like, you are correct, Ethan. You did solve this puzzle. Now it leads to another puzzle. And he's just like, So yeah, that's a fun one. But from an actual play perspective, not necessarily just a consuming the source material. Mm-hmm. I think both games, you know, I'd love to play either with you. Cypher System would definitely be easier to get going, and there'd be less temptation mm-hmm. to live a secret life in a surreal actuality. But
To be fair, I know I've been playing Invisible Sun for like half a year now, and I know nothing about Invisible Sun, and I haven't read any of the book, so it's like a very weird experience.
Players don't have to, like, the players don't have to read the books.
I don't even think I know how to play it, honestly.
The rules fit on about an index card, at least no bigger than an 8.5 by 11. Everything else is just inspirational content, so you can play out, you know, the rest of your lives. But kind of back to the topic at hand, you know, and some of Jeff's stuff, but I think you would really dig a one-on-one Cypher System session. And then, you know, that's a generic rule set, so when we say PBTA, you know, that's kind of, you know, there's some philosophies.
Right.
But Cypher can be skinned to all sorts of different ways. In particularly, it leans hard into playing a game as if it was a movie. So I've run a lot of one-shots for small mm-hmm. groups where it's like, this whole thing can be a self-contained mini movie. And I usually, make fake movie posters and things like that. Like Escape from Gorilla Planet was kind of like Planet of the Apes, so on and so forth. So, you know, anytime I'll send you an inquiry through your official email. But, you know, I'd love to get you in.
So what you're saying is that now you two have to play wrestling flavored Cypher System on the podcast.
I think if we were to do like wrestling and Cypher System on the podcast, I'd kind of change it up to where we're both promoters. And here's the story. Line, I'll pitch it to you. Turns out that the world champion is the actual world champion that's going to be sent from this planet to somewhere else in the universe to represent the planet Earth because there's an invading force. So our world champion will face off against other world champions. You know, that's really why Daniel Bryan got out of the WWE for a while, because we had to send him off in outer space. Never mind, I'm going on a tangent. Sorry.
See, I would say if you were to do a wrestling cipher system game, it would be, I mean, I feel like lucha movies are right there in terms of like wrestling culture that is specifically tied around like cracking a mystery and getting to the bottom of something, you know. And that's not just because lucha movies are like extremely close to my heart and a thing that I am like low key obsessed with as like a pop culture artifact. I just think they fit really naturally into that.
Very good.
Also on the topic of cipher system, I will point out, I will call out an episode that I really, really love, which is we played Numenera with Darcy Ross way, way back when, and it was one of those games that, like, I just think about a lot, and I really enjoyed it, and, like, it really did play with that two-player space really, really nicely and comfortably.
Yeah, Darcy's one of the nicest human beings I've ever met in my life.
Oh, a divine being of light is really the only way to describe it.
All right. Well, do you have any more questions for him, Grant?
But just let us know where we can find you online. And,
Not yet. Because we have the penultimate question.
Oh, I see. My question's not allowed. I get it. No,
your
just
question.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, Grant.
You can ask that question after.
Grant?
But first, that's...
Yeah, how about you sit? How about you sit, Grant? Sit down.
Be careful. Yeah, I'm falling on hard times, Jeff Stormer.
You don't know what hard times are, Dad.
Hard times is when you're invited on a podcast and you ask a question and the host says, no, that comes later in the show. And that means
that's hard times.
An opener. You're just going to job for the champ. No, all right.
See, when you're a walk behinder and you're not a leader, the view never changes. The view never changes.
Oh, no.
I could quote Dusty Rhodes promos literally all
day. They're so good.
All right. So.
Please cut us off before this turns
into an hour of
Dusty Rhodes
Please
promo discussion.
Continue. It's my gift to Ethan. And maybe to the listeners. But yes, the penultimate question, because Grant foolishly asked the final question before we were ready. The penultimate question is fill in the blank. If you like blank, you'll like Party of One Pod.
I'm gonna say, it's a tough one. I gotta think about it.
If you like Jeff Stormer, you'll like Party of One Pod.
I mean, that's the easy one, and everybody loves me. I'm great. Because the easy thing is I can say it in regards to other actual play podcasts, which I guess is useful, but is not like... I'm trying to find like a good like cultural grab on. If you like Fresh Air with Terry Gross, I think you'll like Party of One.
Nice.
Or Heart Points, Pot of Love, any other two-player focused actual play. But I'm going to go with Fresh Air with Terry Gross, WHYY, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the greatest city in the world. NPR, Philadelphia, Terry Gross, national treasure. Really just better than all of us at radio put together. Terry Gross is just the greatest. I think that in terms of the level of intimacy that you hear on mic, in terms of the connection that you hear between two people sitting in microphones talking to each other, I think Fresh Air is a good reference point. And after this recording, I'm going to tweet out Party of One is the Fresh Air of actual play podcast.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us. Where can we find you and join your fan club?
See that, Grant? She also asked the question.
Oh, I'm sorry, Grant.
No, it's
Grant,
all right.
Cut. Grant, ask the question.
I'm outraged. I am personally outraged.
This is sad. This is like Kofi Kingston getting a shot at the title. No, I'm just kidding. Which was emotional for me. So, Mr. Jeff Stormer, where can we find Party of One podcast online, as well as where can we find you on the socials?
So, the answer to both of those is you can find it on Twitter at Party of One Pod. I might break that into two social accounts at some point, a show-specific one and a Jeff All of My Projects one, but I haven't yet, and I might never. Who knows? For now, Party of One Pod on Twitter, partyofonepodcast.com. We just gave our website a bit of a makeover with, now we have like a press kit and like we're working on getting all of the episodes up there with tags so that you can kind of hop around from episode to episode and like all that good stuff. Put a lot of work into the website. It looks very good. I'm very proud of it. partyofonepodcast.com, twitter.com/partyofonepod, jeffstormer.com has links to all of the games that I make, podcasts I record, all of that stuff. The other podcast I make part, All My Fantasy Children, is a character creation podcast about tabletop role-playing games. You can find that at allmyfantasychildren.com. And perhaps most importantly, the third podcast I do once a year is Talking Nog. You can find that at soundcloud.com/talkingnogcast. It is a podcast about eggnog, and I answer eggnog questions, and I share recipes and look at photos. And this is a real podcast that you can listen to right now.
What a gift.
This is not me doing a bit.
What a gift. Thank you so much. And thank you also to Grant.
Thank you, Grant. This was a delight.
For coming in while Ethan had to go save the world and hanging out on host and making all the wrestling jokes. When Ethan told me he couldn't be here, I was like, oh no, Jeff is really into wrestling and Ethan knows about wrestling and I don't know anything about wrestling. And I just, how is this going to work? Grant Ellis.
I do love wrestling. So much.
So Grant, if people want to join your fan club, how can they do that?
I don't have a fan club, but they can find me on Twitter at WisePapaGrant. And I have a Patreon that I use, patreon.com/GrantHartEllis, that I use to pay all the cast members of my actual play Twitch shows. I usually produce one show at a time, and I focus on getting diverse players. The money doesn't go to me, it goes to the players. And yeah, they can go to patreon.com/GrantHartEllis. There's a bunch of books that I published over the past year. I think I have 6 titles that have hit the stores. But if you follow me on Twitter at WisePapaGrant, you can find out what those are.
Mm-hmm. And I don't usually do self-plugs, but since Grant is on the show, Grant and I do a kind of, what am I even calling it, one-to-one romantic fantasy anthology play show on my channel, twitch.tv/starvingsoubrette. So if you like one-to-one, if you like Party of One Pod, you might like Half Sick of Shadows. Or if you like Grant, you'll definitely like it. So thank you both for being on the podcast with me.
Thank you. This has been an absolute delight.
Thank you to Jeff Stormer for talking with us, Grant for co-hosting, my Jeff for the music, and you, thanks for listening.
Hey, I'm back. If you would like to be on the show or have a creator in mind that we should contact for future episodes, you can tweet us at TooManyRPGs, or you can contact Lauren at @jail_nicegirl.
Or Ethan at @SuperRobotBear. If you like this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher and recommend us to your friends. It really helps us to spread the show to new people.
Too Many RPGs. Not actually a show about wrestling, despite anything you've heard here today.
So is the world saved?
For now.
For now? You didn't save it permanently?
Is the world ever permanently saved?
I guess not. Just felt like we had to tie that.
Yeah, it's tied up.
Tie that
up. The narrative arc.
Yeah, the narrative arc of Ethan saving the world.
For one episode of this podcast.